Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Mickey, who is part of the local Sangha here in Murphy's and has been for many, many years. And at a recent community meeting that we had, actually it's a meeting that we referred to when we were talking with Penny last week about the garden, she got very inspired about, sort of the theme that we've been on for this year so far, deepening practice and being a steward of practice, and felt moved to write us an email about it. And as we read that email, we thought, ooh, it would be very fun to have Mickey on to talk about that insight as we lead up to our January 29th event. So welcome, Mickey.
Thank you, Jen.
So maybe we just start by looking at that. What was that insight? What were you seeing about practice when we had that meeting?
Well, there were two things that Sherry pointed to at the early part of that meeting that, they probably were not new things, you know, they're probably what Sherry says all the time, but the person that was there at that time really heard them.
Yeah, you were ready to receive it.
Yeah, really took them in. And the first was when she talked about that what we really are on is a path of liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And, that just felt like it really went right to the core, like, oh, right, oh, yeah, okay, we're not fooling around here.
Yeah, it's really big what we're doing.
That's right.
We can forget that because practice, like anything, takes a day-to-day form, but what we're actually doing in practice is very, very big.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first piece of it. And then she really talked about how, and she was talking actually at the time to monks and the close Sangha, but really she was talking to all of us, talking about how it's all of our responsibility to essentially to maintain the practice and to, be sure that the practice is has integrity and is available for people, and that it's not just Sherry and the monks who have that responsibility, but it's every single one of us.
Mm-hmm. And so when you were listening to that, it sounds like you really got it. I'm part of the Sangha.
Yeah.
It's not up to them, some sort of amorphous them, or in some cases you say a specific Sherry and the monks. It's up to all of us.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it can be easy to get into kind of a, I'm separate from that. I'm not part of that. I mean, even where I live, even as close as I live, it can feel like, I'm just someone who practices, and
yeah,
those are the people that are really training. But it's my job as much as anybody's to see that, to pay attention to what's happening and to step up to take part where I see a need.
Uh-huh. And have you seen that kind of manifesting, not even necessarily in concrete day-to-day things you do, but just as you've had that insight, have you noticed an impact it's had for you?
Yeah. One place where I really noticed it was on the New Year's retreat, which is, a retreat I've been going to for years. It's part of my yearly plan, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized this time when I was there, I was much more attentive to, I guess I would say to the environment and towards what was going on in the retreat, not just to what I was doing in the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like I showed up to be part of not only who was partaking of the retreat, but in whatever ways I was present to be part of making it happen.
Mm. I love that, and I'm not sure I can quite put words to it, but what I saw when you said that was it's like the ultimate version of holding the privileged environment. Because in one way, of course, the privileged environment is about, I'm focused on what's going on for me, right? I'm not watching other people. I'm not looking at other people. I'm not concerned about what other people are saying in group or that sort of thing. I'm really looking at my own process. But there's a way in which holding that larger awareness that you're talking about that, yes, we are each working out our own salvation diligently within the context of this Sangha, and that there are other folks here on the retreat as well. And again, I'm not quite sure I can say how, but it just in what you were saying, it seems like that's such a beautiful representation of I'm here to do my practice, and in me doing, quote, my practice, it serves all of practice.
Yeah, that's really exactly what I'm experiencing, that, you know, so here's practice, and here are these offerings, and yes, they're for me, they're for my practice, you know, and they're an incredible gift for my practice, and they're for our practice. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking the other day about, you know, the newsletter we used to have was called In Our Practice, and so what I take on in my practice, it may be for me, but it's not just for me. I'm doing it for, not for isn't the right word in a way, but it's the best one I can think of for all of us.
Yeah. Well, and it's back to the classic, if it's so easy to say, well, I mean, there's hundreds or thousands of other people who will do, what difference is it going to make if I don't show up? But imagine if each of us did that. If each of us said, well, it doesn't really matter if I show up, there would be no practice, truly.
Right. Yeah, and it feels like both showing up physically to things that our Sangha is doing and also just showing up when I sit down and meditate at home. That, you know, again, that's, in a way, that's holding the environment for all of us when I am have integrity in my practice.
Yeah, I really agree. Yep. I feel like I can feel that, you know, and they've even done studies on it. Those, what was it, Washington, D.C. or New York City, I think, where they had, hundreds of people meditating over the course of several months and actually lowered the crime rate in the city during those months. And so, you know, who knows what way you can measure all that stuff, but it does feel like it has a very real impact on each of us when we come together and we literally practice together, but as you say, the integrity of each person's practice wherever they are practicing.
Yeah. And I think it does, you know, in the theme of this year of deepening practice, it really then calls us continually to see what ways we can deepen our practice, you know, so that we don't get comfortable.
Yes. And, you know, I think one of the things we've been talking about is, you know, everyone can do that process of, well, someone else, you know, you live right close to the monastery. There are probably lots of people who would project onto that. Oh, well, those are the really dedicated people. But you just said how, you know, you could do that very same process. Well, that's really the monks who, all the way on up to the guide, right? So the entire Sangha could put the responsibility of offering practice on this one person, which not only is not at all what practice is about, because it's not what the Buddha taught, right? Each of us is working on our own salvation, but it's also not sustainable. And so it feels like we have this wide open invitation from the guide in this year for all of us together to step forward and look at what does it mean if practice isn't up to this one person, but it's up to each of us and to all of us.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm really grateful that you wrote that email and spurred the possibility for this conversation, because it was such good timing with, let's see, the event's coming up on January 29th, where Sherry's going to do a video workshop with the whole Sangha, anyone who's able to join, followed by the radio show the next Tuesday. I guess that would be 2 weeks from tonight. And then the email class, where we'll be working together to lay out a plan for how are we going to deepen practice this coming year.
Yeah.
Which I have a feeling you'll be signing up for.
I already have. Even have my confirmation.
Excellent. All right, yeah. Mickey, well, anything else you want to throw in before we...
Well, I just noticed that, I mean, it's probably a given, but it just seems worth mentioning that, you know, whenever I am inspired to step up and take on more, to deepen my practice, to step up, conditioning is inspired to step up and try and make me not do it.
Yes. We could even maybe say conditioning is desperate to step up and make
That's
you want
right.
to not do it. Yeah.
That's right. So, you know, it kind of goes with the territory. So it just seems helpful to know that.
Yes, that's an excellent point, and why it's so perfect that simultaneously with the guide offering us this invitation to step forward and have practice, because of course what you're saying is the critical point. We step forward to steward practice, to take responsibility for practice, not for practice ultimately, but because that movement of doing that is the thing that will ultimately transform each of us. It is the thing that each of us is seeking. And so simultaneously, as she's offering that invitation to us, the organization is offering the year to support that because, as you say, conditioning is going to go crazy.
Yep.
So,
yep.
No surprise there, but we'll all be together holding hands, so that's okay.
That's right. That's right, which is the best part about it.
It really is, isn't it? Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Mickey. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure for me, too. Thank you, Jen.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
We'll turn it over to you, Michael.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Mickey. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Wow, that was great.
That was fabulous. And I of course, I always enjoy listening to the good news. I always get a lot out of it. And this one particularly because I have been looking a lot. In fact, a blog is coming out shortly on the privileged environment. And there were several references to that, to the privileged environment, and along with the year of deepening practice. Because I have had a growing concern that the year of deepening practice, people coming forward to participate more, could very possibly slide into a situation where the privileged environment gets lost, where people start blurring the lines and losing sight of the fact that the privileged environment is an absolutely critical aspect to our practice. That practice is a place where we come together to do practice. And the last little part of that conversation about how egocentric karmic conditioning is going to just be right there to slide in and take advantage of everything that it can take advantage of to sabotage this project, both by trying to talk people out of participating, and then by setting people up in situations that where they're not going to be successful. And not maintaining the privileged environment is going to be one of the big pitfalls that we must pay great attention to, not stepping into, falling into. What do you do with a pitfall? I guess, who knows? But anyway, not falling for ego's ideas about what it means to be Sangha. So the blog that I've just been working on speaks to that and trying to assist people to understand that being together as Sangha is not the same as being social. I was very grateful for that mention of all of those aspects of what we're doing in one short little good news segment.
Yes. Great.
Very helpful.
Great. Yeah, I look forward to reading that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm enjoying writing it. It's always interesting to this is one of the things in deepening practice that we'll all be looking at, and I suppose I particularly am looking at it right now. How do we welcome new people into the practice and remember to include them in all of the information that we've had for years, those of us who have been doing this for years, and also assisting those of us who have been doing this for years to simply take those points of practice to a deeper level. So it's not a matter of there are things that apply to new people and there are things that apply to old timers. everything applies to all of us all the time. And it's how we use what is arising in our conscious awareness that makes the difference, lets us, you know, either takes us down a path towards suffering or a path away from suffering. So when people are new, of course, there's a great deal of self-consciousness because the voices in their head are saying, oh, that's such a beginner question. Everybody's going to be bored to tears. Nobody wants to hear you ask something so elementary. And that's not true because it helps all of us to look at where we are with a particular issue. For old-timers, it's looking at, huh, now do I still have beginner's mind about that? Or has that slid into something in the category of, oh yeah, I know about that. I can, you know, make a shopping list while people talk about that because I have that one covered. So it's the same practice for each one of us. And we can't even know that somebody who just started practicing last week isn't actually having what could, if there were such a thing, a deeper insight than somebody who's been practicing for years and years and years. We cannot know where anybody is in practice, what insights they're having, how that relates to the karma that they're overcoming, and all of those sorts of things. So the bottom line is we need to be heads up every moment with everything that life is offering us if we want to free ourselves, if liberation is what we're really going for in practice, and I hope it is. If it's not, if somebody, you know, supposedly over the gates of Japanese monasteries, it says if life and death is not your primary concern, don't come in here. So if people are doing practice because it's interesting or it's kind of the buzzy thing to do now, or all my friends are meditating, or well, maybe it'll, you know, maybe it'll make things a little easier for me, or maybe it'll help me get that job I want, or you know, maybe I'll find the love of my life, or whatever it is. Then those people could do me a big favor and look somewhere else, because that's not what this practice is about. It doesn't mean that if somebody has voices of conditioning that say those things, they can't work with that and go past it. But there has to be a deep desire to go beyond ego, the process for the individual and for the Sangha at large will not be a helpful one.
Wow.
Mm. See, people should not give me too much time on my own. I get into these things. But anyway, that's what I've been looking at a lot over the last couple of days, so I'm happy it came up. And I hope, with the video, and if not, with the radio show, and if not, then with the email class. But at some point, I hope, as a Sangha, we can really look at what is the privileged environment and why is it so important? Because it is so important. And one of the things, you know, a lot of this, what we're doing this time is looking ahead to the time when I'm not around to be guiding this ship any longer. And when that happens, it's really important to me that people have as deep and clear an understanding of what we're doing in practice as I can assist in imparting, because that's the best chance we have of practice going on and being something that's available for other folks who are ready to do a practice like ours, as it was available for us when we were ready to do this. And the privileged environment is just, I would say, it's top three important things, important aspects of practice for people really to get and to commit to maintaining. So maybe we'll even have a show about it sometime. Everybody who calls in will ask questions and talk about their experience of privileged environment.
Wow.
How fun would that be?
That would be great. And maybe they'll do it tonight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Sherry, I have some announcements here.
All right. Let me guess. Is it a video show and a radio show?
That's part of it. That's part of it. As you know, as Jen mentioned, the Deepening Practice program is coming up. That's three events. Live webcast with you, Sherry, on the 29th. The special two-hour open air. That's on the 31st, 2 days later. And then the email class from February 3rd through 21st.
Yes. Yes. All with the sole purpose of supporting each person in their practice and an encouragement that that person would also support everyone else through supporting practice and Sangha. The whole deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Which reminds me of what Mickey was talking about as well.
Yes. Yeah, that was that was perfect timing, wasn't it? That little goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we are very excited that the schedule of practice opportunities for the whole year is now live on the website.
I heard that rumor just today. So
it's
can
gorgeous.
Actually go there. It's gorgeous?
Yes, it is.
Wow. And so I can go there and see everything that is being offered. Right now, I can fill in my little calendar and apply for retreats and all like that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Good.
So the website is schedule.livingcompassion.org. Again, that's schedule.livingcompassion.org. And now, as you said, is a great time for folks to look it over and so they can be ready to sign up when the registration opens for the events that they are interested in.
Yeah. Put it on your calendar to sign up.
Yes.
Good.
Yes, indeed. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Thanks, Michael.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
No, this is Dennis from Toronto.
Hey, Dennis. That feels slightly miraculous.
It is. It's a miracle provided by the people that help run the show here.
Oh, good. Very good. Now, Dennis, you sound a little muffled to me.
Okay, I'll try to move a bit closer to the microphone. Is this any better?
It is. It is better.
Okay.
All right. So what have you seen since we spoke last?
Oh, well, since we spoke last, after I got off the phone, I got all this self-hate about how, it was a mistake to call in and, this isn't going to solve all your problems and all this sort of thing. And so I had a good bout of, having to wake up from that and say that, it was just, it's about finding support and looking at what I want to be aware of and pointing myself in the right direction and all those things and not just a quick fix.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So what you said just reminds me, I was talking with somebody earlier today who was telling me a story about someone else. And this person, happened to be a woman, came up with this business idea. And when I heard it, I couldn't believe how brilliant it was. It was one of those, oh, yes, the timing is perfect, it's brilliant, this is so going to work, okay? And so we had this conversation about this woman and going on about it and the business plan and all of that. And the person who was telling me about it said, wow, your response is really interesting because to a person, everyone she has told about this has said, that's ridiculous. It's never going to work. It's going to fail.
Uh-huh.
And of course, inside, I'm thinking, yeah, naturally, because what is talking is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And it is devoted to failure. So it's going to be as negative as possible about anything that is going to change anything for the better. So I was just reminded of that when you reported that what the voices were saying, because it's so typical and it's so transparent.
Yeah, I'm glad I have the the years of practice to kind of be able to see it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just so, if there were a 1 in a million chances that something that you're going to do would work, would help, would benefit you in any way, anybody who cared about you would be saying, go for it, risk it, who cares, it doesn't matter, try it, how can it hurt? But those voices, and again, as I know you know, because you have been practicing, if we could be disidentified enough, we could judge, we could gauge our life by what they're saying. If we would just do exactly the opposite of what they're saying, we could probably stay on a pretty good course most of the time.
Yeah. Actually, I've been looking a lot at disidentification lately because I've been doing anxiety in a different way than I usually do. And I was kind of getting at this last time that I usually get anxious and then I start meditating and then I go to a different place where I kind of just process it and get numb and go back to like this childlike personality type thing. And then now that I'm not doing that defense mechanism anymore, I'm kind of just stuck in the anxiety and I can't, I've been telling myself, well, look, if I can find a way to disidentify from it, that'll be the key. And because of the way this whole old karmic pattern was set up, I thought I was disidentifying from it, and I really haven't been, and I've just been going somewhere else. And like, and this came up on retreat for me because Dave was saying that I was speaking as though I need to sit with anxiety, but I don't really need to sit with anxiety. I just kind of need to accept it and let it go, right? That's what I'm thinking. So I've just been going back to a very basic practice of just seeing anxiety, seeing for what it is, and just going back to the breath. And,
yeah.
Not expecting my body to do anything different or to feel a different way, but just to go back to the breath.
Yes. And to me, and I don't know if this would be helpful for you, but for me, the attitude of mind is as if that experience is happening to a really good person that you care about. So the attitude of mind is I'm sorry this is happening to you. And not in a pitying, not even a, and I want it to be different. It's more along the lines of, I'm here with you. I can't fix it. I can't change it. I can't really do anything about it. And I'm not minimizing your experience. I'm not asking you to deny your experience, and I'm not denying that it's really hard and painful for you. And it is what is, and I'm here. So you're not alone, and just come and sit with me, and we'll just keep breathing.
Yeah, that's a really nice thing to do, and that's what I've been doing it from the standpoint of inviting the mentor in.
Yes.
Which, as when this stuff really started hitting for me, I really started looking, maybe that's part of the way it's happened, but I've really been making a lot of really conscious efforts to bring in the mentor and to really see, the mentor is always there for me, and it's just the sort of things you were saying. It's just a really positive experience if you can see that from where I am. Like if I can see that from where I am, because
yeah.
When I'm really, really heavily identified, I just need to, you know, I can see that there's just like a crack there and of light, and I just need to go towards it.
Yes, and visualization could be helpful, depending on where you are. You know, you have a visual of the guy that this is happening to, right? Could be the way you look now at your age. It could be that you have a sense that it's somebody younger. But you have a picture of who that person is. Now, when I say picture, let me be clear. I don't have any pictures in my mind at all. So guided imageries and that sort of thing, it's completely gray in there. But I know what's there, even though I can't see it in my mind. Okay, so I'm not, for anybody who's listening who says, oh, well, I can't visualize, yeah, you can, because anybody can do what I'm talking about. So you have a sense of him, and you have a sense of the mentor. And what you can practice doing, say you're meditating or you're driving, you know, you're doing whatever it is that you're doing. And the two of them, the person who's anxious and the mentor, are together. And you are aware of them and aware of them there together, and you are not either of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that might be that little bit of distance that would help with the disidentification.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing a three-part one. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. I'll just tell you. And so I have the mentor holding hands with the person that's suffering,
mm-hmm.
and holding the other hand being held by this image of a child I had when I was on retreat, like the way I was when I was a child before all the socialization and all that. Just, you know,
yes.
Sort of an active, joyful, exploratory person that I just don't identify. I don't spend a lot of time being that person these days.
Yes.
And what's that like?
Is that helpful to have that visual?
It is. Yeah, it is. I think the hardest thing is just getting there, because the emotions and the mental stuff is just such a suction cup, you know, like I'm having a picture of like, you know, in like those horror movies when they suck out your brain or something. It's just, it feels like it's...
yes. Yeah. Yeah. So one other little piece of it that we were practicing a lot with over New Year's that might go nicely with what you're doing. When you're sitting, you are aware of the breath, okay? And what you're doing with your mind is thinking, non-thinking.
Uh-huh.
And the way I described it to some folks at the monastery a couple of weeks ago, which I don't know, I like it. I don't know actually if they found it moving, but I'm gonna try it with you and other people who are listening. Okay. So imagine, and you can do it right now, okay? So you are listening to the sound of my voice. So all of your faculties are focused on that sound. And, in fact, if you close your eyes, you'll realize that you're even looking at the sound kind of as it comes into your head. And so everything is there. All of your faculties are focused on that sound. Are you with me on that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's as if you're concentrating, but the concentration is not a barrier to any larger awareness. It's just that everything that you can bring to bear is being brought to bear on that, on the sound of my voice. And then in a moment, I'm going to stop talking, and I want you to sense the opening, the absence that's there when I stop talking. So I'll count. I'll go 1, 2, 3, And when I hit three, I'll be quiet, and all of your faculties are still focused in the same way, and the sound is gone. So one, two, three. Okay, did you get a sense of it?
Uh-huh.
All right, so that absence, that non-mind, non-thinking, is what you're thinking about. So you're using the faculty of thinking to think about non-thinking. So
uh-huh.
rather than having that occupied with, and the language is not good, but, you know, it's the best I can do under the circumstances. When that is occupied with content, with content, you get one experience. When all of those abilities are focused on an absence, you have a very different experience. And so perhaps practicing that, so they're your little team of three over on the couch or wherever they are, and you're sitting there, and meditation is the easiest place to practice this kind of thing. So that you're sitting and meditating, and your attention is on the breath, okay? And then you leave the breathing to awareness. Turn your attention to the mind, because that's where the attention is going to go anyway, right? I mean, we're with the breath, and then the attention goes to conditioned mind, because that's what it's conditioned to do. And when it's there, you practice thinking, non-thinking. So the mind has an object. It is doing what it is conditioned to do, but it is not supporting the karmic connections that it is conditioned to make and follow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that. I'm going to, re-listen to that again and give it a try.
Good. And the thing is, and I know you know this, so these are the kinds of things I say for other people who might be listening along. It's a practice. And any practice that we're going to take up, I don't care what it is, we have to put in the time and effort to develop that ability. And that's what this is. So, will you be able to do it perfectly the first three or four times you sit? No, of course not. And it's something that will grow and deepen over time. But if you stick with it, I think you'll see remarkable advances, if you will, in your ability to disidentify.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good. Let me know.
Yep. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Sherry and Michael and the whole show and the Sangha and great.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Dennis. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors and then we'll be right back.
All right.
This is Scott from Porchdog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porchdog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think open-air listeners might want to know about working with Porchdog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about open-air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porchdog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. Shine.
elegance invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Seattle.
Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
How's life?
That's what I'm calling about.
Funny I should ask, huh?
Funny you should ask, yeah. I'm calling about a new opportunity that I have to practice. And conditioning wants to make it a big thing that I need to panic over.
Now, this you're not talking about the weather.
No, but that is kind of fun.
It's
winter wonderland here. But
you are having some exciting weather.
We are having fun.
Uh-huh.
Kids
okay.
are playing outside in the snow. It's great.
Okay, good. So what else is going on?
Well, what else is going on is that I have breast cancer.
You what?
And I have breast cancer.
Whoa. Can you say a little more about that?
Well, I'm just having a very interesting experience in that, you know, all the responses around me and, of course, conditioning, you know, is just, that's horrible, that's awful, and I feel like I'm really having the experience of being with the mentor and just seeing it, I'm seeing it as an opportunity, not just a practice, but, you know, as just an opportunity in general, and I don't feel like I'm having to work at that, which seems like a very different response than I would have expected maybe, you know, a few years ago or something, but it feels, feels like I'm really with myself, and I'm with the mentor, and I'm kind of okay with the whole thing, and I'm looking at it like, okay, well, let's just see what's next. I'll practice with this, and then I'll do that appointment, and we'll see what that is, and then we'll move to the next thing, and then I don't know.
Well, you know, you've probably heard this expression. This is the kind of thing that we practice for.
Yeah, and it kind of feels like I'm ready for it.
Hmm.
Like, not that I would have asked for it, but you know, it feels like it's something that I can handle and continue to practice and be with the mentor about.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of been a neat experience. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it's been a good experience.
I hear that you couldn't say that to a lot of people and have them think that you're anything but nuts. But yes, when we don't see ourselves as separate from life, when we realize that everything that happens in life could happen to us and that nothing that happens is a mistake and we haven't done anything wrong and this is just what is and all of those kinds of things, then, yeah, who would I rather these things happen to?
Yeah. Well, and I have said to a few people, you know, I'm kind of just fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a good opportunity to, you know, take care of myself and do a few things differently. And I've gotten some funny looks and, you know, some interesting responses back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they think I'm faking it and they think that, you don't have to be brave. mm-hmm. you know? And I'm like, well, I don't really feel like I am. I feel like I'm just being.
What I'm hearing is this is just what's happening now. And so as you've gone along in life, there's always been something that's happening now.
Right.
Right? Life is always bringing us some darn thing to look at and be with and practice with. And so this
yeah.
is the current thing.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel that different from, you know, the last thing or
mm-hmm.
the thing before that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it maybe is slightly more personal. You know, because it doesn't necessarily really involve another person. It's just me.
Well, except I happen to know you have a family.
Well, yes. I mean, it is happening to them, too, and I'm having to deal with their feelings about it. But it's not like a problem in between me and another person.
Exactly.
There's no emotional.
We're in this together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more of a, and I really feel supported by practice.
Mm-hmm.
In going into it, and you know, it's just an opportunity to look at my practice and do a little bit, you know, maybe be a little bit more committed.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives me an opportunity to take care of myself better, which, you know, perhaps I haven't always been really good about.
Mm-hmm.
I put the family first, put the kids first. Not always time for me.
Yeah,
but. You know, this is what a great excuse.
That's right. The doctor says breakfast in bed every Sunday,
yeah.
at least.
Yeah, really, I can't vacuum. I've been eating really well. I've gone to a vegan diet, and my husband is joining me from Solidarity, and I'm going to the gym all the time and just kind of having a good time.
Yeah, and the point that you're making is a point I wish everyone would hear, that you're really living the way it would be wonderful if we all lived all the time. And not that we listen to those things that have us really kind of wasting our life on to-do lists and shoulds that, you know, 1 second after we're dead won't mean anything to anybody on the planet. And we take care of all of those things instead of the precious human life that we have been given. So I really hope everybody who's listening and hears that loud and clear. That, in fact, Lisa, there have just been so many of these that I've, people tell me a lot of stuff. It's the nature of my work. And just the number of people who have no thought at all about anything larger than kind of what's on my to-do list today. And then these things happen in their lives and they're completely unprepared and just thrown into chaos and misery. And I mean, things like, actual physical things that you'd think a person would have on their radar, you know, like what will happen to my family if I get killed on the way to work? And it's just this conditioned assumption that it's all going to go on forever. I don't need to think about that. Nothing is ever going to happen to me. And of course it's going to. It's going to all of us. So to be with life, and that's one of the things that an awful lot of people get from a situation like the one that you're currently in. Suddenly, it's like, now, would I rather spend the evening with my family or doing chores? Okay, I know what choice I'm making. You know, in fact, if I go about it right, maybe we can all fold the laundry together. But we just are looking at life from a different, I think, more intelligent perspective.
Right, and that, that place that you were speaking of where, you know, something throws you into you know, complete misery, I really think that I would have gone there, you know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Without practice. Yep.
Yeah, I really feel like that the practice and the daily stuff that I'm doing, and going to the retreats, and the, you know, the email classes and whatever, it's all, you know, it's all been preparing me.
Yes.
To handle whatever comes up, and then, you know, there'll be a next thing after this one. And
yes.
That, you know,
that is such a good point.
I don't think I would have been there with this in this way had I not had practice.
Yeah.
Or if this had happened, you know, like I said, 5 or 6 years ago.
And we don't necessarily think of practice in that way, I think. That, you know, this every day, yes, I'm practicing as I'm practicing on this day, and it's affecting this day, but it's also preparing me, slowly transforming me, just wearing away that karmic conditioning, helping me be more here and present and centered. It is preparing me for everything that's ahead of me in life.
Yeah, it's like you say, walking through that mist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to get wet at first, but eventually I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'll just continue. I think I need to go. I've got somebody who needs me.
I hear that.
So,
yeah.
I will say thank you very much for everything and practice and being able to talk to you tonight.
Yeah. Keep us posted, huh?
I will.
All right.
I absolutely will. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night, Michael.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That was amazing, Sherry.
Boy. Makes you grateful, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, all of Lisa's points were so excellent. You know, it's going to happen. It's coming.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so many people idealize, you know, being 90 years old and going to bed one night, not waking up the next morning. But, you know, if you get to be 90 years old, you've lost a lot of loved ones. A lot of things have fallen away. You've faced an awful lot in getting there, and
yeah.
So how we face that, whether it's just compounded suffering or whether there's the open-hearted, unconditional love that helps us be grateful for each moment and ready to let go of that moment and open to whatever comes next. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And we have another caller.
Thank you.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from Texas.
Hey, Janice.
Hey.
What's going on with you?
Wow, that last caller put, like, a lot of things in perspective for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Powerful,
isn't it? You know, you know, I had cancer, it's been like 8 or 9 years ago, and it's what led me to practice, basically. And so for me, I'm really grateful that it happened, because I think I would have just, you know, that's like life hitting me over the head with a 2x4. I would have just kept living, suffering with ego karmic conditioning and sucking the life out of me until I was dead, basically.
Yeah.
But what she put in perspective, I was been kind of caught in conditioning and suffering lately, kind of in the same karmic pattern of what I think actually ultimately caused my physical body to become ill. And it made me realize, and I had kind of been talked out of doing practice, like meditating every day, and the importance of, I mean, what I'd come to the conclusion that I had just not, you know, that I hadn't been doing my regular practice, and that's why conditioning was getting me so bad. But that just made me aware of how important it is.
Yes. Yes, because, conditioning make something like meditation. A should, a have to. You know, it turns it into the right person thing to do. Rather than, no, it's the most intimate way of spending time with oneself. And that's not the small separate self. You know, it's having time to be with the being.
Yeah.
Bizarre language, but you know what I mean.
To maintain the clarity or to
just to be with.
To be with, yeah.
Just to be with. You know, it's and the being with then is the opening for the appreciation and the gratitude, the acknowledgement of how extraordinary it is to be alive, what a gift life is, and that you're here and that you have this opportunity to experience the beauty and the wonder that is life.
Yeah.
And when we're doing stuff, it's really hard to get to that experience. When we sit down and sit still,
yeah, and the gratitude and acceptance for whatever happens.
Yes, because it's life. And that's, you know, I think that's the most fiendish thing that karmic conditioning self-hate does, is that it takes that wonder away from us. Life, this extraordinary thing called life that we are experiencing, becomes a ho-hum list of stuff to do to get through another day, get through another week, get through another month, instead of just kind of walking around in amazement that, my God, I'm breathing. You know, there's all this beauty around me. There's nature, there's trees. Just to walk around, drive around, and look at the trees, how magnificent they are. What extraordinary, the weather. You know, just stars at night, moon. I have this thing, I'll tell you this self-disclosing sort of thing. I really dislike going to the grocery store. In fact, I dislike going to the grocery store so much that I will not eat rather than go to the grocery store.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
And the other day, in one of those bolts out of the blue, it occurred to me how really ungrateful that is. That I live in a place where I can walk into a store and I can afford to buy beautiful organic food. I don't want to do that because do you see what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And I made up my mind right then that from now on, I'm going to enjoy going to the grocery store because I'm going to be in the grocery store in the wonder and amazement of that experience rather than in a, you know, any kind of an idea about they're busy, they're loud, they're, you know, they're full of stuff. I don't want to. I like to look at trees. Well, no, that's just silly and nonsense, and I don't need to indulge that.
I guess that could be applied to anything. But
I suspected that when I saw it. I thought, this has broad application.
Yes, it sounds like it.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I'm complaining about traffic. Really? I have a car.
Yeah.
I'm driving. Other people are doing the same. What is the problem?
Yeah, and I was sort of suffering over the fact that conditioning is there, you know, and always there. And I was listening to, like, a recording I had made where I was, the place I was at when I made the recording, I was so amazed at how often I was conscious, you know, not,
yes.
You know, and it was like a totally different viewpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows where we would be without karmic conditioning? This way we get a chance to wake up over and over and over again. Maybe that's a gift.
True.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, anything else shaken?
No, that's about it.
Good.
Not really what I was going to call in for, but that's good. A total shift in perception.
Yeah, well, you'll have to call in again if that topic stays around.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
In the meantime, enjoy.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air.
Hi, Sherry.
Yourself?
Hi.
Hi, Sherry. This is Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm okay. I am taking the fear book and studying through it and replacing the word fear for anxiety because you didn't write an anxiety book.
But they're so similar, aren't they?
Well, for me, anxiety is much harder because it's like a much younger part of me, and it's very, basically, like the note, it's harder because, like, what I was doing, which I got from your book, was, you know, disidentify from the part of me that has anxiety and be with what is being experienced. And when I was in massive anxiety, I was saying to myself, I embrace you, I love you, I embrace you, I love you. And I was also saying, I embrace anxiety, you know. And, you know, and that, like you say, that the little story about how the girl studies the goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the fear book, how you kind of conquer something or make inroads or something as you keep observing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was observing and saying, I embrace you and I love you and I embrace you. And anyway, the thing is with anxiety, I felt like nothing I was doing was making a dent. Like once that little kid is in that state of anxiety and there's this charge. So I want to hear what you could say.
Okay, let me ask you about this. So is this your experience? The like if I'm afraid of something, so in the book I think we do fear of heights is one of them. So I'm afraid of heights. So good. There's an object. I can work with that. But there's really no object to anxiety. Right? It's anxiety. It's there, but it's kind of difficult to wrap your arms around because there's no real content with it. Is that your experience of it?
Yes, more so that it's less specific than fear, but the anxiety is always, it is related to situational about going to some new place.
Uh-huh. So you have both. It's kind of pervasive, amorphous, and then it's also specific with content.
Yes, it is both at the same time.
Uh-huh. Okay. So one of the things that occurred to me when you were describing it is that it sounded to me like you were saying, I love you, and embracing it in the hopes that it would go away.
I know you say in the fear book that that can't be our goal.
Oh, shoot. But it is, right? I mean,
Because it was just such an awful hell. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I was desperate for some shift.
Yeah. It is a misery. For that reason, because I love you, I accept you exactly as you are, and God, I hope you change, is just, we can hear it in the sentences. It's not unconditional. It is in the world of conditional. And so it's never going to work, right? It's just never going to work. And what we're really talking about is, I get in my car tomorrow and I'm driving down the road and a truck hits me and I'm paralyzed. Okay? That's the level of acceptance that we're talking about. I'm not going to be able to embrace it and have it go away. It's not ever going to go away. That person who could just get up whenever and walk around is no longer here. This is a completely different reality that we're living in. And that's the acceptance, that's the level of acceptance that we have to acquire. And it's really, really, really hard because we know it could be different. With the paralysis, I know it's not going to, I have to grieve the life that I no longer have, and then it's like a death, right? And then begin to make peace with this new reality that I live in, and eventually then find the life that I'm going to have under these circumstances. You with me?
I think I might have missed how that analogy works. I'm sorry.
Okay. The whole thing?
You mean like basically I understand wanting something to go away makes it not go away, but I didn't understand the truck and the hit by a car and paralyzed.
Well, what I'm saying is the level of acceptance that you're going to need to find for this is the acceptance that comes with being a person who doesn't feel this way is not an option for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to feel this way for the rest of my life. Now, how do I make peace with that? How do I love this person unconditionally? How do I help her have a full and complete life under these circumstances, not a half life here clinging to an idea about how it should be that I would like better.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Big, isn't it?
That's deep.
It is.
And the anxiety does come on the heels of the whole fear book thing about we have to go out and do things that are scary.
Yes. Yeah. And so all of the aspects of practice you put in place, so, you have this young person who feels this way, and you're going to help her go have the life that she wants to have, even though These are the feelings she has.
What do you call that level of acceptance?
Unconditional. So it's, I love you exactly as you are, and I'll help you be any way you want to be. doesn't matter. There's nothing you can feel, say, do, be that will affect my love for you. I'm here. 100% all the time, period. And I want to tell you something else, Elizabeth, just because we're here talking. This is something that I've been looking at a lot lately because it's been up in our practice a lot. There's a line that someone in the practice gave us, which is there's no change in consciousness without a change in behavior. And the thing that, so does that, do you, can you relate to that?
Yeah.
Okay. So what stops almost everybody is the way they feel. So I can't do that because I'm afraid. And what we're required to do in order to get free is to realize that how I feel has nothing to do with the choices I make. So, for instance, if I decide that I want to do this particular job, and part of that job is public speaking, and I'm terrified of public speaking, therefore I can't do the job that I want to do. That's how conditioned thinking goes. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So what people are taught to believe is they have to get over being afraid before they can do that job. But the real trick of it, the real secret to success, is to recognize that those feelings are there and I'm going to give speeches anyway. So how I feel has no control over what I do, how I am.
Which means you're going to face the anxiety of public, of making the public speech.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the voices will say, yeah, and you're going to throw up halfway through the speech and whatever. And what you'll do is continue to do what you've decided to do. And what will happen is that slowly it will dawn on you that what was controlling you was a pack of lies. Then you're free. But if we wait to feel different before we do what we want to do, we'll never do what we want to do.
Right. And facing your fear and doing what you want to do, then you're in the other boat of, now I'm doing my fears, so I have the anxiety. It's almost like then you need the anxiety book for after the fear book.
Yeah, or you could just tackle them all at once.
Thank you.
Do the crash course. Okay. So
I need a different level of acceptance.
Yeah, you do. Because there's a perfectly lovely, fine human being who is trapped in a world that she doesn't want to live in because there are these feelings in the body. And your job is to say, I just can't worry about those feelings. I'm committed to you having the life that you want to live. So that's what we're going to do. And the feelings will be there or they won't be there. I can't worry about them.
Thank you.
Thank you. You'll let me know, won't you? I'm vitally interested in this subject.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. What an amazing show, Sherry.
Great people.
Great people, amazing, powerful, wonderful. I'm so privileged.
Yeah, yeah, and inspired.
Yes.
Keeps us going, huh? 10 years and counting, Michael.
So I heard, yes.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.